This is Pillow Talk, brought to you by Killer and a Sweet Thing. I'm Eileen Kelly.
And I'm Jacob Safarian. On this podcast, we normalize sexual experiences by allowing the people who live them to speak for themselves.
On today's episode, we're joined by transgender model and activist Ava Gray. In addition to modeling for Gucci and GQ, she's appeared in the FX series Pose. Ava uses her platform to raise awareness for queer and trans rights. Ava Gray, welcome to Pillow Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I guess we'll start off with, for those who aren't familiar with the term transgender, how would you define it?
It is a word that I strongly shy away from, just because breaking it down, the word trans, you know, that means to change, and then gender. And it's very much, I believe that we were born as is, like, you know, our spirit is our identified gender. So I never felt there was a point where I changed my gender. But I do believe in, you know, woman of trans experience or man of trans experience, because there are certain trans experiences that I do identify with, and I do that does resonate with me.
So if that's a term that you don't like to use, yeah, what term do you use?
What woman of any? Trans experience or man of trans experience? It's super long, but it definitely gets the point. And then as far as like a gay man, I don't like to say that either, because it definitely reduces a man to just the sexual orientation. And I very much like to say queer and understand that there's such a broad spectrum, and what you like today can very much not be what you like tomorrow.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Or it could be additives, you know, that you like tomorrow as well. So I do like to give people that very much openly way of just saying queer and not trying to identify that.
Absolutely. And on that note, do you remember the first time you realized that your spirit, as you put it, mm-hmm, was maybe different than the one that people were assigned you at birth?
Absolutely. I used to watch, every morning, there were two music videos that would come on. It would be Aaliyah, Rock the Boat, and it would be J-Lo, Love Don't Cost a Thing. And I would just be in my room, pop, 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 like kick. I would do that dance moves all the time. I remember I was telling my birth mom, I said, you know, I can't wait to grow up and look like this. And everyone, you know, just kind of came in the room and gave me a look of like, you know, that's not how you're going to grow up. So there wasn't a point where I felt that I wasn't female. There was a point where everyone was trying to tell me that I was male. But for me, I knew what I was, and they definitely knew as well. But that was the point where it was brought to my attention of, oh, like maybe something is different. And then growing up, I would see my grandma have conversations with my female cousin that I wasn't included in. And I felt, you know, I needed to know these things as well. I wanted to know about what I felt was my body and all these different kinds of things. And nobody would just kind of take me seriously.
So when you were talking to your family members about how you felt, what were the rationale?
They came from a place of growing up back when they were very oppressed, seeing the queer community being attacked viciously, also not understanding, not agreeing, not liking the queer community. It came from a place of just being in the South. So their responses were not nice. Mm-hmm. Very much abusive, very, very, very physical, very, you know, I'm going to beat this out of you. And then it just grew into that part of my life grew into this part where I understand what, like, just like very much the impact that love has in somebody's life. And which is why I do take care of the queer youth. I like to have everybody at my house all the time. I cook, because I didn't have it. And I understand how much it would have meant. So that negative very much grew into such a beautiful positive within my adult life, but they were not happy. They were not very welcoming.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Northern Virginia, in Alexandria, and then I moved to New York as soon as I graduated high school, I was out.
That's the same as me. When I turned 17, I'm from Seattle, and I was like, get me out of here. Get me to the big city.
Yeah, very much.
At the time, did you have any access to information about what being trans meant at the time?
I remember I didn't care to quote unquote transition. I like to say start presenting, but I didn't care to, because I wasn't treated too badly by my peers. I was very much treated as my gender, you know, and I was able to, I was very rebellious, I would say, or as my family would put it. But that's just, that was just me. Like I was very in oversized clothing and, you know, thinking it was a dress and just all that kind of stuff. So it wasn't a big impact to me because I didn't feel any different.
At what age would you say this, like, maybe the shift of you starting to dress mm-hmm. in the way that you wanted to? Like, did you know from the beginning, like, I...
Yeah, I mean, as far as, like, dressing, it was like, third grade.
You know, it was very young, yeah.
Yeah, it was about third grade. I was in a Christian school, and it did not go well. But, I mean, that's just how I felt. That was my feeling. I didn't understand. I didn't want to wear these like suits and or whatever the dress code was, and that wasn't me. That's not what felt like me. And you know, they didn't understand the impact. And it's so sad that people couldn't look in my eyes and just show compassion or just show love or just understand that there's a whole world outside of yourself. You know, I believe that we were put on this earth by like one person and just to soak up the knowledge from our peers, and which is why I am so adamant about bridging the gap between all different kinds of communities and never saying that the queer community needs to be on top or this community needs to be on top, because you're my peer. You're my peer. We're all the same humans. Looking different doesn't mean that we are different.
Yeah, we all come from the same place. Mm-hmm. I guess, could you speak a little bit about what it was like emotionally to come to terms with your identity?
I remember starting hormones. It was like 2016, I think. The last day of September 2016 was when I took like my first estrogen pill. But months prior, I skipped many different doctor's appointments like the entire year. I was supposed to start way, way, way before I actually did. But I was so scared. And it was very much how I was raised, you know, that I'm going to be a statistic. I'm going to die. I'm going to never be loved and accepted. And I remember I had to understand that I was giving up, you know, essentially, quote unquote, three things, you know, like my family, my career, and any potential to find love. And I wanted to know, or I asked myself if it was important to me. You know, if those things were important to me, then just living my truth, living how I see myself and how I feel, what my spirit is telling me. And I chose to go, well, obviously, I chose to go the very authentic route. And it's been beyond a blessing since. I knew I wouldn't have made it without starting that hormones.
And starting that journey.
Mm-hmm.
Do you keep in touch with your family? Like at this point, or is there any level of support? Or
I talk to my grandma, my birth father's mom, and I talk to my cousin. They actually came up for my surgery when I had my SRS. That's a sexual reassignment surgery. I had that and they came right up. They spent the time with me.
Oh, wow.
My cousin, I remember she knew I was transitioning. Because I remember I had this like long hair, and I remember I FaceTimed her, and I was very much like, we obviously need to have the conversation. And I said, hey, you know, my name is Ava. And I remember she hung up and I was like, oh, what happened? And then she called me right back and I said, oh, what happened? She said, oh, I was changing your name to Ava in my phone. And it was like the most beautiful thing ever. She just did it immediately. My grandma, she was the one who was very not supportive growing up of any just queer topic, anything like that. And she called me and she was like, you know, I was watching a documentary on jazz, and I remember she called and she apologized. She said, I'm so sorry for everything that we put you through. You know, we just didn't understand. Nobody understood. That's not something that we grew up with in our personal lives, but what we saw in the media, it wasn't something that we wanted you to go through. So that was a beautiful moment that, you know, that she was born in 1947. And up until me, you know, she had one mind regarding trans, regarding anything queer. And then I loved how her love for me was able to change, and just not just regarding me, but everyone around. You know, she very much accepts all of that outside of me as well.
That's amazing. And did her capacity to be open and love expand to your parents or no?
No.
Sure. And did the discovery of your womanhood coincide with any sort of body dysmorphia?
My body didn't change too much. Like, this was always my body type. I mean, I got boobs, but like from the hormones. But I mean, actually, unfortunately, I had them all my life. But this was pretty much my body type. But I always knew that I wanted my SRS. That right there was something that I got my surgery date, or I got my consultation, and I annoyed the crap out of them. I called them every day. I went to the doctor's office. I would miss work. I would go to the doctor's office just to tell them, hey, I'm ready. Hey, I'm ready. Hey, I'm ready. Hey, I'm ready. That's how important it was to me. And then they got so sick of me and they said, hey, do you want it in a month? I said, let's go. And unfortunately, I thought I was going to be so happy. This was when Trump was in office, and I got incredibly depressed. I got so
before or after the surgery?
After I got the surgery date. For that entire month, I barely left the house. I left my job. I couldn't get out of bed. And it was such fear that it wasn't going to happen. You know, even on the surgery table, I remember the day of, they said, you know, hey, is there anything you want us to know? And I said, please just do it. No matter what, just do it. And I remember they had already put the
IV.
Yeah, not morphine, but you know.
Anesthesia.
Thank you. Inside of me. And I was trying to wake up just to say that no matter what, just do it. And I remember I woke up, and of course, like, there's this huge, like it's just so swollen. So it's like, and there's all this gauze. And I remember I felt heavy down there. And I remember I cried. I cried to the nurse and I said, what happened? What went wrong? Why didn't anybody do it? And I was just crying. I was like, no, like, this, I can't believe this happened. Like, Trump did something. He passed some law and everything messed up. And she had to call me. Everyone in the room had to calm me down. They were like, no, look, you have to take a minute. You just have to understand that it did happen. And that's how serious it was to me. You know, it wasn't. Just, oh, I think a vagina is going to be cute on me. It wasn't one of those. It was, I don't see myself without it. You know, I don't see myself living without it. And as women of trans experience, you know, some opt for all different kinds of surgeries. For me, that was it. That was mine.
And can you walk us through a little bit? So you got the surgery here in New York?
Mm-hmm. With the beautiful, amazing Dr. Rachel Bluebon Langner. Did an amazing, amazing job. She was from start to finish. She was just so welcoming. She was so, so welcoming. She was so sweet. She was so understanding, so patient. She answered everything. She's at NYU. She's originally from Maryland, and she, thankfully, it was perfect timing, because when she came to New York, she was truly the only person that would see me, because a lot of surgeons don't, or just quote unquote, consider you a woman until you hit your 1 year or 2 year mark.
On estrogen?
Mm-hmm. And so they won't perform the surgery because in their eyes, you're not a woman. And I did go to another surgeon and he wouldn't even see me. He told his nurse to come in and tell me that you're not a woman until you have gone like a year. And I was when I got my surgery, I was 9 months, I believe, on hormones. But my consultation, it was way before. So
and they'll literally use that terminology, mm-hmm. like, you're not a woman until...
He was very rude. He was very, 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 very rude. And Rachel came at an amazing, amazing time. Because I looked up an interview with her. She did with some news channel. And she said, that's not, you know, a dependency. I'm going to do it regardless. If that's what you feel, then... who am I to judge? And it was such a beautiful thing. It was such a wake up call. And I went right to her and everything worked out so perfectly.
How did you? So you found her just looking up like mm-hmm. news articles yeah. and news sources of people who were performing the surgery mm-hmm. in New York?
It was definitely a lot of research. And there's not a lot of resources. People who do it through insurance.
Yeah. Did you do it through insurance mm-hmm. or you pay out of pocket?
Yeah. I did it all through insurance. Thank God. Everything was done through insurance. So I didn't have to pay anything.
And how long did recovery take?
recovery is like up to a year. I had it June 8th of 2017. But you are very, like, I guess, quote unquote, functional after that 3 month mark, that's when you can like go back to riding bikes, riding horses, going in the pool. You can have sex. That 3 month mark is when they clear you.
Can you walk us through the process? I don't know if this is how it is anymore, but I know in the past you have to dilate, correct?
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. So do you want to walk us through that? Just like post-care, I guess.
Yeah. I remember in the hospital, it was so tender. It was so sore. And I was so scared of my body and I cried. I cried to my sister. Not my biological sister, but just like a very, very close. I cried to her and she was like, why are you crying? I was like, because I'm scared of my body. Like I remember I dilated for the first time and I touched something and it was just the most painful shock ever. And Rachel was like, oh, okay, well, at least you feel things. And that was a good part. But on the other hand, I had to shower and I had this new thing and I was scared. And on the ride home, everything was bumpy and I was nauseous and I was like, this is horrible. Like I hated being trans. I felt like it was a cruel joke that we were like, why are we put here when, you know, and then going through all this stuff just to identify as that. I guess I have more of an understanding now that recovery part is over, but that dilation part, you start with like a little tiny, well, it's not tiny, but it's like a rod, and then it's four rods and they just progressively get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think I started on maybe like the second or third rod. But that whole dilation part, it was not fun. It was not easy. And you had to do it 4 times a day.
Yes,
you just couldn't go out. You had to do it 4 times a day for maybe like the first month.
Is it going in and out of your vagina, or you're just holding it in there?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You just stick it all the way in until all the dots are in there. And then you just, I mean, you still push some more. You still use like some more force. You just hold it in there.
And so now you're no more dilating.
You still have to dilate like for the rest of your life, but you can choose to have sex.
Okay.
Yeah, like sex can replace it if the partner is sized correctly.
Absolutely. And if you don't mind telling us, when did you first feel comfortable becoming sexually active again after your surgery?
A month and a half.
Okay, so you can have sex after the 1 month point.
No,
chose to do your, you just couldn't wait.
Yes. Okay. It just happened. I'm going to go with that one. It just happened, guys. But you're supposed to wait for 3 months. And a month and a half, I was like, I'm going to wait 7 months. And that was my goal. I was like, I'm going to wait. I'm going to make sure everything's correct. And it just happened, and it was like the most beautiful thing ever. And everything went in, everything worked, everything was beautiful, everything was great. And I was like, I love this. Like, this is the best gift ever.
You're like, I finally feel home.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I just have some more, I guess, some technical questions. I feel like for people who are listening that maybe don't know kind of the ins and outs of the surgery and stuff. Do you have to do, so you said, like you had a laser hair appointment today. I don't know.
That one was for my face.
Okay. But do you have to do that down there? Because I feel like
it is suggested that you do it prior to surgery.
Mm-hmm. I just know like how things are getting flipped around.
Yeah.
And like anatomically, that's why. Mm-hmm. Did you do that or just?
I had one session and then they were like, oh, like, do you want it in a month? Basically because you're annoying me. So I ended up having that one session. So I didn't really do anything. Thankfully, no, there is no hair. Because they like cut the hair follicles from anything that's going to go inside. So they're, thankfully she, you know, was able to eliminate all of the hair. And then I got laser hair removal months later on like the outer region.
Got it. Okay. Awesome.
And was there something about getting your surgery you think that it gave you that not getting a surgery would have, an emotional way?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember every day was dresses and heels, you know, because that's what my standard, that's what my vision of a woman was. And I felt like that because I didn't feel like a woman. And I'm not saying that my surgery, that was the day that I was a woman, but I felt off. I didn't like it. That's never how I envisioned myself without a vagina. So I felt I was compensating for something that I didn't have. And after my surgery, I was able to harness my energy, you know, very much embrace my masculine and feminine energy, very much be in tune with that yin and yang, and very much spread that as well, you know, spread the importance, you know, that everyone has yin and yang, like regarding of or disregarding your sexual orientation, your gender, you know, all of that. We all have our moments. I was able to be comfortable in coming in sweatpants and a hoodie, and I don't have to worry. I don't have to do anything. You know, I just have to be. I have to be Ava, and I was able to learn about what kind of woman I wanted to be once everything was aligned to me.
That's amazing. And then, kind of just switching gears a little bit. In your dating life, have you ever met anyone who's fetishized your identity?
Absolutely. And not all the time did I know. Actually, there wasn't any time that I knew. But over a period of like questions, it was very apparent that, oh, this isn't your first rodeo, baby. Like, you know, you very much like me only because I am a, you know, quote unquote fantasy. And I'm not too sure how to, you know, feel on the topic, because I don't put down chasers in the community. You know, they're just called chasers, where they only go after women of trans experience, and that's where they get their sexual fulfillment from, mainly pre-op. I don't put them down, but I'm not going to endorse it. You know, everyone likes what they like. Whereas I have my preferences, I'm not sure if it's their preference or if it's, you know, truly like fetishizing. And I haven't really like broke it down and been able to analyze it yet to where, is it a good thing or a bad thing? Are you having an appreciation for this kind of womanhood? Like, what is it? So I've never been very sure how to feel about it, but I received nothing but love from them. They were sweet. They were kind. It wasn't, you know, they did ask questions and try to learn about my body and learn what I liked. And I did like that. You know, they did take me as an individual into account, but they weren't, you know, honest, I guess, that about why they sought me out.
Yeah.
I'm interested, where did you, like, some of the people that you feel like fit that, not
description.
Description, yeah. Where did you meet them?
On social media. I've always been pretty like vocal about when I started presenting about my progress, about my transition. So it wasn't, you know, hard to, and then every, you know, or the majority of pictures that I post, I always have a caption. So it wasn't hard to just put it together.
And what were some of the things that people would say that would kind of like show their hand that you'd be like, I don't really know where you're coming from here?
As far as like the chasers?
Yeah.
Yeah, any red flags?
Yeah, I remember I was talking with this one guy, and he had dropped his phone on my bed. And I remember I looked down and it had the app Grindr on it. And I said, what's this? You got some explaining to do. And I remember he, you know, went through this whole turnaround of, oh, my friend sometimes uses my phone.
Oh, no.
I said, oh, baby, let's sit down and let's have an actual conversation, because we're adults. You know, I'm not judging you, but I want to know what's happening. And he let me know, you know, that's how he finds the women of trans experience, and that's where he likes to go for his sexual fulfillment outside of being like monogamous or like dating or something like that. Like, that's where he likes to go for his hookups, and that's where he finds that the most, or that it's just easier to find a woman of trans experience on that app. And I have a friend who, I remember he came out, or he quote unquote came out to me. He was a, hey, you know, I'm queer, or I'm, yeah, queer. He used the term queer. And he was explaining to me, you know, why he felt this way. And it's because he likes women of trans experience, but only pre-op, only pre-op women. And it took a little while to let him know, you're very much straight. You know, you like women. You know, genitalia isn't what defines our gender. you know, they're women. What you like is what you like in the bedroom. There's nothing stopping me from putting on a strap on. You know, that doesn't mean that my partner is gay. That doesn't mean my partner is queer. In fact, like that's where the male prostate is. I have no, I very much don't like when people say, oh, that's so gay. He's playing with his butt. That's so gay. We do all different kinds of things with people that we trust in the bedroom. You know, we share our body. You know, we're meant to be a little vulgar, a little nasty, exploring each other. That's beautiful. Don't put them down. Don't oppress anybody, you know, because that's not something that you like or that you're not comfortable exploring. He's living his life. She's living her life. Don't do that to people. Don't be nasty. Because what does that get you? You know, nothing. Where are you at now?
Yeah, it's coming from ignorance.
Yeah, you just made a derogatory mark. You just tried to put someone down. Did it lift you up? Did it pay your bill? No. Leave it alone.
Yeah.
And if you can't understand it, chalk it up to that I just can't understand that. That's fine. There are some things that I don't understand. But I'm not going to say that's wrong, that's nasty, especially to someone who's also in my community. I have a social awareness that we are all being targeted. We are all dying as a community. You know, we need to stand together, not so much be so quick to judge, because that lets the outsiders in.
Would you say there's a lot of judgment within the community?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you speak to a little bit of that?
Yeah, I'm very vocal about that. within ballroom, in case I throw out terms, just very like fluidly, butch queens, they mean men that identify as gay. Femme queens mean women of trans experience. So just in case I ended up slipping and throwing a term out there like that, those are what those terms mean. So there is a huge gap within men that identify as gay and women of trans experience. And I hear a lot of times, oh, you're just an extension of a gay man, or, you know, oh, you don't identify as straight because you're trans. And then, oh, your transition is done now because you've had your surgery. It's such a lack of respect. It's such a lack of knowledge. And we're so close with each other that you can simply ask. There's no problem with asking a question. And, you know, a lot of women of trans experience, I hear, you know, like to throw out the terms faggot, or very much as soon as they stop, quote unquote, living that life, it becomes very derogatory. They have such a negative cloud on that community. And it's because both feel kind of disrespected. Like, well, how can you leave me for that heterosexual community? We're queer, you know? And I like to say queer because I don't like to identify it. I don't like people to identify it, because we're focused so much right now on identifying things that we're forgetting to know each other. You know, you presenting yourself as, hey, I'm Jessica, I'm the polyamorous, gender fluid, okay, girl, your name is Jessica, just Jessica. I stopped at Jessica. You know, I need to know you. You know, all this stuff that you prefer, what you like, where you like it, I'm not into that. Like, I'm not into you, so I don't need to know.
For sure. But then what would your response be? Because I know it's a common thing that I've heard from people of a trans experience, mm-hmm. saying to other queer people, like, oh, don't, you know, don't loop me into this sort of queer cis gay
narrative.
Absolutely.
And it's solely based on that hurt. Whereas we don't feel fully supported by the queer community. And I understand that, because in the beginning, as far as civil rights went, or not all civil rights, but queer rights went, women of trans experience were very much in the forefront. Women of trans experience of color were very much in the forefront fighting. And I see a lot of endorsements going towards men that identify as gay, or very androgynous men, or non-binary identifying. So I understand the hurt, but it's never a reason to take it out, you know, on the community. It all can be solved by asking questions, by bridging that gap, extending yourself as a resource, because people fear what they don't understand. And that's with me. You know, I remember I was able to change a lot of perspectives. You know, people would, you're a man. You know, they came at me very strong. Men will come at me very strong when they found out. And I was very much, how do you feel about this? Why do you feel about this? And I could see their tone change, their attitude change. And it was a scary situation, but I understood what knowledge, or just the power of knowledge. Because after they were able to understand that, their spreading of negativity would very much cease, you know, whereas they would become positive to it or just very neutral about it. We're not making ourselves resources. And if we can't get along within our own community, you know, we're not going to get any respect outside. We're still going to be targeted, assassinated. We're still going to be shamed. We're still going to be stereotyped. We're still going to be put in a category and very much a box that we know that we don't identify as, but we're not speaking up because we're not speaking to each other.
That's really powerful. I mean, it reminds me of even what you said, that you like changed your grandmother's opinion. Yeah. Like, you know, you just, it's even just that one person.
Absolutely.
And have you always been this, you know, you seem like you've reached a really amazing place of like love and understanding, even for ignorant people.
Yeah.
Have you always been able to like be this?
I'll say I was always like influential, but I was very negative growing up because I was very much one of those hurt people. I'm going to live my life through hurt. And I would say my environment definitely was built into that, you know, whereas my peers would be negative by, you know, my family. And I had to learn, I'm an individual, you know, I'm not a product of them. Is this friendship worth it, you know, to stick around just such negative people? Or, you know, and then I was able to, once I was able to learn myself as an individual, what my womanhood meant, what my adulthood meant, being responsible growing up, I was able to just kind of reevaluate the kind of message I wanted to do. I was able to be an outsider looking in and seeing the destruction of my people. That was hurtful. You know, being in such close proximity to hate crimes, I was able to see that. And I was very much, you know, they deserved it. You know, that just wasn't me, you know, or they were being flamboyant. And those were the comments I would hear. And I was able to ask them to assess whatever they just said and say, do you feel fully comfortable? Like, are you upset that they were comfortable to live their life? Your peer, you know, you're not comfortable with yourself. You have to figure that out. Like, that's hurting you, you know, for you not to even stick up for your peer. And it translates to women who get with men that are known for cheating.
Absolutely. And you mentioned hate crimes. Were these in North Virginia you were privy to certain things?
I didn't hear about, I mean, just in school, I would see a lot of hate crimes, but mainly when I moved to New York, it seemed, you know, deaths were always down the block of men that identified as gay or women of trans experience, you know. And then, I mean, now women of trans experience deaths are so prominent and just very much announced. But I like to stress that as a community, we're being targeted. As a community, we're still dying. We're still victims of hate crime.
Have you ever personally felt unsafe?
Yes. I wouldn't off the bat tell men that I identified as trans just because I would have liked an opportunity for them to know me. And I've had comments of, I'm shooting up your apartment, you know, I'm going to shoot the windows up. It wasn't the best kind of situation all the time, but I was able to learn what was conducive for me as far as disclosing that. Whereas I respect every woman's decision, no matter, you know, if you're going to tell him, if you're not going to tell him, that's an individual kind of thing, girl, you know, be careful. But for me, I was able to learn that I don't like hiding it. You know, I like being able to discuss. I like being able to discuss my past, show my baby pictures, and just very much be open along that line.
So you would say you're pretty open right up front with your partners, mm-hmm, or people you're dating.
And do your partners, for the most part, respond positively at first to this?
Mm-hmm. There will always be, you know, men who hear the word trans and think sex worker, think bodybuilder, think man in a dress, think man in a wig. But I understand that in 2018, that's the generation that we were still conditioned to believe. You know, I'm working to change it, but I still understand everyone's confusion. So I'm never upset. I'm hurt that, you know, you couldn't see me, but I still understand that that's how we grew up.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you have any, you know, words of advice for your younger self now that you have come to this place that...
Don't let other people speak things into your life, you know, whereas I transitioned or I started presenting pretty late. I think I was like 21, 22. And I knew that I wanted to do it all my life, but I let people speak things into my life. So as adults, you know, we don't allow that. We don't allow, we're very much, no, that's not for me. No, ma'am. No, no, sir. No, thank you. And from birth, you know, I let somebody who was my peer, who was very equal to me, that doctor, you know, put that gender on me. You know, I wasn't, and from there, we were put in that box. From there, I felt put in that box. And then through conversations with my birth family, I was put in a box. My peers, I was put in a box. And so all of that, I felt limited. I'm noticing that when it comes to men that still identify as gay, although they know that they like women, they have an attraction to women, they have a sexual attraction to women, but they still identify as gay, and it's so hurtful to me because as women, if we're bi, then we're bi. You know, people, oh, okay, she likes men, she likes women. It's accepted. Men, I see that it's different and it's hurtful. It's hurtful to see the struggle and feel the struggle with, oh, you sleep with men? Well, then you're, as far as the queer community goes, you're gay. You know, the straight community, you're gay. Women, you're gay. We don't want to touch you. And they become quote unquote damaged goods. And I don't like that. It's hurtful. So they continue to identify as gay and limit themselves from all different kind of opportunities and possibilities, and solely from people speaking that into their life. You know, don't limit a person's possibilities.
And I'm sure it's no loss on you, but the current administration seems very dead set on marginalizing the trans community. Mm-hmm. Are there any particular ways that you unwind and or learn to, you know, sort of tune out the news cycle?
I don't pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. And I know that seems like such a negative thing, but it's such a joke. You know, they are such a joke. I think when Trump was, you know, very much on his thing about make America great again, that's exactly what he is doing. You know, we are standing together as communities now. We are very much aware. So it wasn't his vision of making America great, but as Americans, we're becoming great because we're talking to each other. We're saying go out there and vote. We're being very active in the political field, and it's beautiful. So I think it's very much backfired on him, thank God. But for me, I continue to spread my message. I understand that they're fools in the office. The justice system has been corrupt for eons. And that was actually, prison reform was actually very much my first target. Even before I started presenting, it was my first target to change once I got my platform, because I understand how people are convicted, you know, for just petty crimes. And I will say that the justice system is so screwed up that they will allow you to drink in public as long as you have a bag over it. They will allow you to smoke cigarettes, you know, something that we know causes cancer. Babies have to inhale it, toddlers, women with children, elderly, we all have to inhale this, but they make the medicine, you know, weed, that illegal to smoke that, but they give that to you when you are just to cure cancer, and just very much cure a lot of things or just become very much remedies. But they make that illegal, you know, so whose interest do you have at heart? Are you looking out for us? You know, no, you're not, because you're saying, go ahead and everyone inhale all of this. Everyone drink, you know, do all this. But now we're going to put you in jail, you know, or you can't smoke that as a medicine and or as a remedy in public, you know, even though it's not harming anybody. It's just not.
Modern day slavery, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, just so predominantly affects like low income people of color.
Absolutely.
I think that's really great that you're using your platform to talk about that, and we need more people to be doing so. But at the end of the day, do you feel like you remain hopeful?
Yeah, always. When I do speak, I always get a lot of responses when it comes to, well, that's just not our world. And my response is always, well, then change it. Like, are you going to change it? Are you going to continue to live in that life, you know? Because I can't do it by myself, you know? And I tell people that I can't do it by myself. You know, I'm hoping to maybe spark the person or the community that can. But when you say, well, that's just the world that we live in, you're giving up. You know, you're giving up for your children, you know, for everyone that you love. You're just saying, well, I'm just going to let, you know, these people that I don't know, who don't know me, put everything on my life and just say when I should brush my teeth, when I should eat, when I should do this. I'm going to let them condition me. You're just giving up.
Absolutely. And for our listeners, can you walk us through any questions that are inappropriate to pose to a trans person?
I would say, so with me, I'm incredibly open. I use myself as a resource and I answer all questions. I think the initial question should maybe be, hey, how open are you? What can't I ask? What are some things that you're comfortable discussing? And then if he or she is not comfortable, you know, then it's on them to offer a resource. Because there are many people who are comfortable discussing their experience and their knowledge and spreading that. So on both parties, you know, things can be so much more achievable if we either give out resources or we, you know, very much are upfront. Hey, what can you discuss? What can you not discuss? Make people feel comfortable.
Yeah. And do you have any like resources on hand or any websites or platforms or organizations in New York for other people with their gender identity?
Well, I am a major resource. I'll say I'm a major resource. I love asking all those questions. But we have GLSEN. We have youth programs by the Gay Men's Health Corner. They have all different kinds of programs and places all around the city too. Cal and Lord, that has been an amazing resource for me. I go to Cal and Lord on 18th Street. They also have another one in the Bronx. There's Facebook groups. There is a website, and that's where I got a lot of my surgery questions answered.
Okay.
It has the word Susan in it. I remember that.
And then I guess I mean, we can round this out kind of for our last question, but do you have any advice for anyone who's listening who may personally be questioning their gender identity?
Do it for you. Very much that, you know, don't get caught up in doing it because you think you're going to get something out of it, because it's the cool thing to do. We, as a nation, we understand how fads go, you know, they come and they go. And don't do it to just ride the wave. Don't do it for a man. Don't do it for a woman. Don't do it for love. Don't do it for anything like that. Do it because you need to do it. When I did it, I did it because I needed to do it. I needed to do it for me. I asked myself my own question. Self-reflection is important, not only in the beginning, but throughout the entire thing. And not just about your transition, but your entire growth in general. Self-reflection is so important, and it can be hard sometimes to point the finger back at you, but it's important for you to grow. It's important for you to spread positivity.
For more content on how sexuality dictates our lives, you can visit us at www.killerandasweetthing.com and follow us on Instagram at birds.bees. You can visit the Trevor Project online for more information on gender identity. If you're questioning your identity or need support, you can call the Transgender Hotline at 877-565-8860. Lastly, you can keep up with Ava Gray's career on Instagram at ava.a.gray. This is Pillow Talk.